Act 4. 73. Exterior. The intersection of Main and Atlantic. Night. The wind is still blowing, sending sheets of snow down Main and continuing to build up the drifts, but the snow itself has almost stopped. 74. Exterior. The remains of the town dock. Night. The waves continue crashing in against the seawall, but not as hard as before. There is an overturned fishing boat lying at the foot of Atlantic Street, with its prow smashed through the display window of Little Tall Gifts and Antiques. 75. Exterior. The sky. Night. At first we see only blackness and clouds, but then there is a lightning, a silvering. We see the troubled, smoky shapes of the clouds more clearly in this light, and then, for just a moment or two, the full moon shines through before disappearing again. 76. Exterior, the town hall. Night. The building, visible through whirling membranes of smoke, still looks a bit like a mirage. In the shelter of its cupola, the memorial bell swings back and forth, being gently rung by the wind. 77. Interior, old-fashioned regulator clock, close up. It's ticking loudly. When the minute hand reaches straight up 9, the regulator begins to chime the hour. As it does, the camera pulls back and turns, giving us the town meeting hall of Little Tall Island. It is a spectral and beautiful sight. Every member of the community that we have met is sitting there, plus all the other islanders, 200 in all. They look eerie by candlelight, like villagers from an earlier time, the time of Salem and Roanoke, let us say. Sitting in the front row are Mike and Molly, Hatch and Melinda, Reverend Bob Riggins and his wife, Kathy, Ursula Godso and Sandra Beals. Robbie Beals is up on the stage at a small wooden table to the left of the podium. Before him on the table is a little plaque that reads, Town Manager. At the rear of the room, 8 cots have been set up in one corner. On these, the children are sleeping. Sitting on folding chairs to either side of this little enclave are Angie Carver, Tavia Godso, Joanna Stanhope, Andy Robichaud, Cat Withers, and Lucien Fournier. They are trying as best they can to guard the children. The last bongs of the regulator clock die away to the sound of the wind whining around outside the building. People look around nervously for any sign of Linoge. After a moment or two, Robbie gets up from his little table and approaches the podium, tugging fussily at the hem of his sport coat. Robbie.
Ladies and gentlemen, like you, I'm not sure what we're waiting for, but...
Johnny Harriman. Then why don't you sit down and wait like the rest of us, Robbie? Nervous laughter greets this. Robbie frowns at Johnny. Robbie.
I only wanted to say, Johnny, that I'm sure we'll find our way through this situation if we stick together, as we have always stuck together on the island.
78. Interior. The town hall's front door. Night. It smashes open with a loud, echoing boom. Outside, standing in the snow on the stoop, we see Linoge's boots and the black shaft of Linoge's cane. 79. Interior. Robbie Beals. He stops talking and looks toward the door. His face is just pouring sweat. 80. Interior. Montage of islanders. Tavia, Jonas Stanhope, Hatch, Melinda, Orr, Reverend Bob Riggins, Lucien, others. All looking toward the door. 81. Interior. Town hall corridor. Night. The boots step onto the black and white checked tiles. The cane keeps pace, coming down at regular intervals. We track with the boots until they reach the door that gives upon the meeting hall. Then the camera booms up to the double doors with their glass panels. Written across them is Little Tall Island Town Meeting Hall, and below that, let us trust in God and each other. We can see the islanders looking out toward the visitor, their eyes wide and afraid. Hands clad in bright yellow gloves come up and grasp the 2 doorknobs. They open the doors toward the camera. 82. Interior. The town meeting hall doorway. Reverse. Night. Linoge stands there in pea jacket and yellow gloves, his cane tucked beneath one arm. He is smiling, eyes more or less normal, his monster teeth prudently hidden. He strips off his gloves and tucks them into his jacket pockets. Slowly, and in a silence so thick it's deafening, Manoj enters the room. The only sound is the steady tick of the regulator clock. 83. Interior. The town meeting hall. Night. Manoj walks slowly along the aisle that runs behind the benches and in front of the crumb-strewn tables where the buffet was set up. All of the islanders, but especially those occupying the last two or three rows of benches, those closest to him, in other words, turn to look at him, their eyes distrustful and afraid. When Linoge nears the little grouping of cots and the sleeping children, the self-appointed guardians draw together, creating a barrier between Linoge and the kids. Linoge reaches the place where a right turn will take him down the center aisle to the stage. For a moment he stands there, smiling benignly, obviously enjoying the fear and distrust swirling in the silent room, feeding on it, likely. We undercut this with all the islanders we have come to know. Cat is defiant. You'll take these kids only over my dead and dismembered body, her face says. Hatch's round, honest face is full of tension and determination. Melinda's full of fear and dismay. We see others, too. Jack Carver. Ferd Andrews. Upton Bell. All afraid. All awed by the presence of the supernatural. And he is supernatural. They feel it. Last of all, we look at Robbie, whose face is drenched with sweat, and whose hand is plunged deeply into the coat pocket where he has hidden his gun. Manoj taps his cane first against the bench to his left and then the bench to his right, just as he tapped at the sides of Martha's gate. There is a hissing sound. Smoke drifts up from the charred spots that are left by the cane's touch. Those sitting closest to the aisles on these two sides shrink away. It's the Hopewell family on the right, Stan, Mary, and Davy. Manoj smiles at them, this time parting his lips enough to show the tips of his fangs. All three Hopewells see and react. Mary puts an arm around her son's shoulders and looks fearfully at Manoj. Manoj.
Hello, Davy. Your day off from school would make quite an English composition, wouldn't it?
Davy doesn't reply. Manoj looks at him a moment longer, still smiling.
Manoj. Your father's a thief. Over the last 6 years or so, he's stolen more than $14,000 from that marine supply company he works for. He gambles with it. And, confidentially, he loses.
Davy turns and shoots a startled, incredulous glance at his father. I don't believe it, that look says. Not my dad. Never my dad. But for just an instant, he sees naked guilt and trapped panic on Stan's face. Only an instant, but enough to deeply shake a boy's trust in his previously idolized father. Davy.
Dad?
Stan Hopewell.
I don't know who you are, mister, but you lie.
Pause.
You lie.
It's good, but not quite good enough. No one, including his own son and wife, believes him. Manoj grins.
Manoj. Born in vice. Say it twice, eh, Davy? At least twice.
His work with the Hopewells done, a family's lifetime of trust ruined in seconds, Linoj starts slowly down the center aisle toward the stage. Every eye that attempts to meet his falters and turns away. Every cheek grows pale. Every heart recalls its mistakes and deceptions. When he reaches Johnny Harriman, Linoj stops and smiles.
Linoj. Well, Johnny Harriman. The fellow who burned down the planing mill across the reach there in Machias.
Johnny Harriman.
I never did.
Manoj, smiling.
Of course you did. 2 years ago, right after they fired you.
Switches to Kirk Freeman.
And Kirk helped, didn't you? Of course you did. After all, what are friends for?
Back to Johnny.
70 men lost their jobs, but you got your payback, and that's what matters, isn't it? Yeah, sure, dear.
Islanders are staring at Johnny as if they have never seen him before, and at Kirk. Johnny shrinks under that gaze until he's about a foot high. Kirk, to Johnny.
There now, you dope. Look at the trouble you got us into.
Johnny.
Shut up.
Kirk does, but it's too late. Smiling, Manoj walks on toward the stage. Each person he looks at cringes like an oft-kicked dog. No eye will meet his. Every islander hopes Linoge will not stop and speak to him or her, as he did to Stan and Johnny Harriman. Linoge stops one more time when he reaches Jack Carver. Jack is sitting flanked by the two men Linoge also mentioned in connection with the assault on the young gay man. Jack looks up quickly at Linoge, then looks away. Alex Haber and Lucien Fournier are equally uncomfortable. Linoge.
You boys really ought to go see that gay fellow you beat up. You'd get a kick out of the eye patch he wears. That paisley eye patch.
84. Interior. Angie Carver. Frowning. Curious. What is Linoge saying about her husband? That he beat someone up? Jack wouldn't do something like that. Would he? 85. Interior. Resume center aisle of town meeting hall. Jack. Hardly more than a whisper.
Shut up.
Linoge.
Fellas in one of those walk-ups on Canal Street, right behind Lisbon. I could give you the address. I don't know, maybe the three of you would like to take away the rest of his light. What do you think, Lucien? Want to poke out his other eye? Finish the job?
Lucien looks down, says nothing.
Alex?
Alex is also mum.
Born in sin, come on in.
Linoge leaves them, walking toward the front of the hall again. 86. Interior. Robbie Beals. He's standing between his little town manager's table and the stage, face still running with sweat, the collar of his shirt now drenched as well. He is seeing... 87. Interior. The meeting hall, from Robbie's point of view. Coming slowly up the aisle to the stage, still wearing the hospital Johnny, her wild white hair spraying out all around her head, is the false mother. It's still Linoge, of course, and he's still clutching the wolf's head cane. False mother.
Robbie, why did I have to die among strangers? You still haven't explained that. Why did I have to die calling for you? All I wanted was a kiss.
88. Interior, the meeting hall, angle on the stage. As Linoge, he is Linoge in this shot, approaches, Robbie yanks the pistol from his pocket and points it at him. Robbie.
Stay away. I'm warning you. Stay back.
Linoge.
Oh, put that down.
Robbie's hand opens. We can see him struggling to keep this from happening, but it's as though a bigger hand, one we can't quite see, has grabbed his and is bending the fingers back one by one. The pistol thumps to the stage floor just as Linoge mounts the stairs at center stage. 89. Interior, the front of the stage, from Robbie's point of view. It's the false mother mounting those steps, with the hospital Johnny flapping around her scrawny body. She points the tip of the cane at Robbie. Her roomy old eyes flash malevolently. False mother.
Why don't you tell these people where you were and what you were doing when I died, Robbie? I think your wife would be especially interested, don't you?
90. Interior. Angle on Robbie, Linoge, and the first few rows below. Robbie.
You keep your mouth shut. Sandra, don't listen to him. It's all lies.
Sandra Beals, puzzled and afraid, starts to get up. Ursula seizes her wrist and gets her to sit down again. On stage, Linoge reaches one hand out toward Robbie's face, clutching with the fingertips. Linoge.
Your eyes.
91. Interior, the false mother, from Robbie's point of view. False mother.
I'll eat the eyes right out of your head.
The bony old hand, not holding the cane, continues to make clutching gestures. 92. Interior. The stage. Robbie stumbles backward, trips over his own feet, and falls down. He skitters backward from Linoge, mom, on his butt, pushing with his feet, finishing up crouched beneath his own small town manager's table. There he stops, gibbering softly. His gun lies forgotten on the stage some 5 feet away. The islanders murmur, frightened, as Linoge steps behind the podium and grips its sides like a confident politician about to orate. Linoge.
Not to worry, folks. He'll recuperate just fine, I'm sure. And in the meantime, It's sort of nice to have him under the table instead of pounding on it, wouldn't you say? Sort of restful. Come on, tell the truth.
He pauses, smiles.
And shame the devil.
They look at him silently, fearfully. He looks back, smiling. Linoge.
So, now we come to it, don't we? I'll lay things out for you, then go downstairs and wait for you to take your decision.
93. Interior. The Islanders. Sonny Brodigan stands. He's scared, but determined to speak. Sonny.
Why did you come here? Why us?
94. Interior. Mike and Molly, close up. Mike. Low, almost to himself.
I guess there's just something about us that pisses him off.
Molly takes his hand. Mike folds his fingers over hers, raises her hand to his cheek and rubs it there, taking comfort from her touch. 95. Interior. Angle on the stage and the hall. Features Linoge. Linoge.
I'm here because island folks know how to pull together for the common good when they need to. And island folks know how to keep a secret. That was true on Roanoke Island in 1587. And it's true on Little Tall in 1989.
Hatch stands.
Tell us. Quit dancing around it. Tell us what you want.
Hatch sits down. Linoge stands at the podium with his head bent as if in thought. The Islanders wait breathlessly for him to go on. Outside, the wind moans. At last, the stranger raises his head and looks at his audience. Linoge.
Your children are here with you, but they're not. It's the same with me, because part of me is with them.
He points to his right, where the room's outer wall is lined with windows. On a nice day, these would give a western view of the slope that runs down to the docks, the reach, and the mainland. Now, the windows are dark, except when Linoge raises his other hand and points the wolf's head of his cane in that direction. The windows fill with bright blue light. The islanders murmur in fear and wonder. Several of them actually shade their eyes. Linoge.
Look.
The camera moves in on the center window. We see blue sky. We see the clouds below. We see what could be a V formation of birds. Ducks, perhaps, winging their way above the clouds. Except those aren't ducks or geese. Those are... 96. Interior. The kids' corner of the meeting hall. Andy Robichaud lurches to his feet, eyes never leaving the glowing windows. His face is filled with dismay. Andy.
Harry. Oh, my God, that's Harry.
He looks wildly at his sleeping son, reassuring himself that the boy hasn't disappeared, then back at the image in the window. And now Angie gets to her feet beside him. Angie screams.
Buster! Jack, that's Buster!
97. Interior. Linoge. Close-up. Linoge.
That's all of them.
98. Exterior. Linoge and the children flying.
Day.
Linoge is in the lead as he was before, just behind the flying cane. He is holding hands with Pippa and Ralphie as before, and the other kids string out behind them, making that V. The kids are laughing, happy, totally blissed out, until...
Linoge, voice. And if I drop them there...
Linoge opens his hands, letting go of Ralphie and Pippa. Their expressions of happiness immediately turn to terror, shrieking. Unlinking from each other, the eight children tumble downward and are swallowed in the floor of clouds beneath them. 99. Interior. Linoge. Close up. Linoge.
They die here.
100. Interior. Resume stage and audience, featuring Linoge. Linoge lowers his cane, and the bright blue light leaves the windows. They fade to black. The islanders are terribly shaken by what they've seen. None, quite understandably, are more shaken than the parents.
Linoge. You'll see it happen. They'll puff out.
He turns slightly to his left, puffs with his lips, and several candles, eight in fact, mounted along the wall, go out.
Linoge, smiling, continues. Like candles in the wind.
Ursula Godso totters to her feet. Her once pretty face is now battered and twisted with grief. She sways and almost falls. Melinda Hatcher rises and steadies her,
Ursula pleads with all her heart. Ursula, through tears,
"Please don't hurt my Sally, mister. She's all I got left now that Peter's gone. We'll give you what you want, if we have it to give. I swear we will, won't we?"
101. Interior. Town Hall Montage. Cat Withers. Sonny. Della Bissonette. Jenna Freeman, Jack, Lucien, and Alex Haber in a guilty little huddle. They all nod and murmur agreement.
Yes, they will give Linoge what he wants. They are ready to do that.
102. Interior, the front row. Hatch stands beside his wife.
What is it? Tell us.
103. Interior, resumes stage and audience, featuring Linoge. Linoge.
I've lived a long time, thousands of years, but I'm not a god, nor am I one of the immortals.
Linoge holds his cane in the middle, raises it above his head, then brings it down horizontally in front of his face. A faint shadow, thrown by candlelight, crosses his face from the forehead down. As it does, the strong and handsome features of a man in early middle age change age. Linoge's face becomes the lined and sagging countenance of a man who is not just old, but ancient. The eyes peer out of sagging sockets and from beneath puffy eyelids. The audience gasps and murmurs. Once more, the director will intercut the faces he wants, getting reactions. We see Andy Robichaud, for instance, sitting beside his son, holding and stroking the boy's small hand. Linoge.
So you see me as I really am. Old. And sick. Dying, in fact.
Linoge raises his cane again, and as the shadow goes back up, Linoge's youth returns. He waits as the audience murmurs. Linoge.
By the standards of your mayfly existences, I have long to live yet. I'll still be walking the earth when all but the freshest and newest among you, Davy Hopewell, perhaps, or young Don Beals.
We intercut shots of Davy with his parents and Don sleeping on his cot. Linoge continues.
I've gone to your graves, but in terms of my own existence, time has grown short. You ask me what I want?
104. Interior. Mike and Molly Anderson. Mike already knows, and his face is filling with horror and furious protest. When he begins speaking, his voice rising from a whisper to a scream, Molly seizes his wrist.
Mike, no, 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 no!
105. Interior. Linoge, at the podium. Linoge ignores Mike.
I want someone to raise and teach. Someone to whom I can pass on all I have learned and all I know. I want someone who will carry on my work when I can no longer do it myself.
106. Interior. Mike. He rises to his feet, dragging Molly with him.
Mike. No. No, never.
107. Interior. Linoge. Linoge ignores Mike.
I want a child. One of the eight sleeping back there. It doesn't matter which one. All are just as likely in my eyes. Give me what I want. Give it freely. And I'll go away.
108. Interior. The stage and the audience angle on Mike and Linoge. Mike.
Never. We'll never give you one of our children. Never.
He pulls away from Molly and lunges for the stairs leading to the stage, meaning to tackle Linoge. In his fury, any doubts he might have had about his ability to prevail over Linoge's supernatural powers have disappeared. Linoge.
Grab him, unless you want me to drop the children. And I will. I promise you, I will.
109. Interior. The kids' corner. The kids are moaning and turning on their cots, their serenity broken by some interior fear, or something that's happening to them far away and high above. Jack Carver. Horror and panic.
Get him! Stop him! For God's sake, stop him!
110. Interior. Resume stage area. Reverend Bob Riggins throws his arms around Mike's shoulders before Mike can do more than reach the foot of the stairs. Hatch joins him and also grabs hold before Mike can throw off Riggins, who is big but a touch on the blubbery side. Hatch.
Mike, no. We've got to hear him out. At least hear him out. Mike, struggling.
No, we don't. Let me go, Hatch. Damn it!
He almost gets free, but then he's swamped by Lucien, Sonny, Alex, and Johnny.
Big boys all. They drag him back to his seat in the first row. We can see they're embarrassed to be doing it, but we can also see that they're determined. Johnny.
You just sit tight for a bit, Michael Anderson, and let him have his say. We'll hear him out.
Lucien.
We got to.
Mike.
You're wrong.
Listening to him is the worst thing we can do. He looks to Molly for help and support, and what he sees there stuns him. A kind of desperate unsurety.
Mike, horrified.
Molly?
Molly?
Molly.
I don't know, Mike. I think we better listen.
Melinda.
Surely it can't hurt to listen.
Sonny.
He's got us over a stump.
They turn back to Linoge. 111. Interior, the Islanders. All of them turn back to Linoge, waiting for the bottom line. 112. Interior, resume Linoge. As he speaks, the camera moves slowly in to close-up. Linoge.
In a matter such as this, I cannot take, although I can punish. I assure you I can punish. Give me one of the babies sleeping yonder to raise as my own, and I'll leave you in peace. He or she will live long, long after all the others sleeping there are gone, and see much. Give me what I want, and I'll go away. Refuse me, and the dreams you shared last night will come true. The children will fall from the sky. The rest of you will walk into the ocean, two by two. And when the storm ends, they will find this island as they found Roanoke Island. Empty. Deserted. I'll give you half an hour. Discuss it. Isn't that what a town meeting is for? And then...
He pauses. We have reached extreme close-up. Linoge.
Choose.
Fade to black. This ends Act 4.